We were a bit spoiled last week with the 60-degree weather. Knock on wood, the climbing temps mean the worst of the winter is behind us. Now, if that's not true, you can blame me. I'm Katie O'Connell, and you're listening to Behind the Headlines from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Coming up in today's show, we'll take a look at some of the unusual places people are practicing yoga, including breweries. And would you take a pill to fight a serious infection, even if its contents were, shall we say, unsavory? We'll have that and more in today's show. Sunshine Week kicks off Sunday. It's an annual initiative that aims to bring awareness to open access to public information. This week is put on by the American Society of News Editors and the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press. This year, it features a series of stories highlighting different elements of open government laws. Reporters from several news organizations contributed work, including Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Mary Spicuzza. Mary wrote about the disclosure of political donations. She talks with Emily Ristow about the article.
So, Mary, can you give me an overview of your story?
Sure. So this is a story for the upcoming Sunshine Week, and it's focused on disclosure, not so much public records, but more campaign finance disclosure, dark money, where political spending is coming from and who has to report what they're spending and where they're getting their money. So it's really kind of a follow the money story, or a has it become impossible to follow the money story?
In your story, you talk about how the disclosure of political donations has become kind of a partisan issue recently. Can you talk a little bit about that and sort of where the sides come down?
Sure. It's interesting. When it comes to like public records for government officials, I feel like there's a lot of bipartisan support for disclosure of, you know, emails, things like that. But it's interesting when it comes to campaign finance and political spending, there are a lot of conservative groups who say this is a First Amendment right, it's political speech, and we shouldn't have to disclose where contributions are coming from. And they say it can lead to harassment or silencing of people who are afraid of being harassed or boycotted, and they don't want to have their name show up in a campaign finance report. A lot of liberal groups say conservatives are funneling tons of money towards dark money. This is about the public's right to know who's influencing their decisions about who they vote for. And so, yeah, it really is. I think a lot of conservatives raise First Amendment questions. A lot of liberals say this isn't about the First Amendment. This is about transparency and knowing where money is coming from.
And then dark money is also covered in your story and how there's going to be an increase of that this election year. So what exactly is dark money and what are some of the concerns with that?
Yeah, that's kind of the mystery, right? And I do think, you know, dark money is a very broad group and there are a broad term and there are lots of dark money groups. But typically when we talk about dark money, we're talking about groups that are spending money in elections, on politics. They're spending money to try to influence people's votes. A number of these groups don't say vote for this person or vote against this person. They consider themselves more issue advocacy groups or social welfare groups. But because of changes of definitions of who is what type of group, some of these groups could, you know, do focus 49% of 49.5% of their efforts on politics, but because it's not their primary focus, they don't have to disclose their donors and where the money is coming from. And so you'll hear these groups. It could be Citizens for Puppies and Kitties and Rainbows and Unicorns, and you would have, and it sounds great, you know, mm-hmm. Who doesn't like puppies and kitties, but you would have no idea who these people are, and it, you know, they could be really not for puppies and kitties, and we wouldn't know.
And you mentioned that this story is part of like a larger series on Sunshine Week. So can you talk a little bit about how sunshine laws play a role in your job as a journalist?
Yeah, I mean, really, we rely so much on transparency and so much on public records to do what we do. And I think there are kind of constant efforts to keep the public from knowing what's happening. And that could be when it comes to campaign finance and who's spending money on elections. It could be public records, as we've seen in Wisconsin, recent efforts to really curtail the public records that are available. There have also been efforts to limit what's available in court files. And a lot of these are ways that reporters, citizens, members of the public can really learn more about somebody. And sometimes, you know, people aren't always as forthcoming when they are trying to put their best face forward. And there's stuff that you would want to know about them that they might not put in a job application, but you would find in the public record. And it would really be a shame to not be able to get that information.
Is there anything else interesting that you came across in reporting this that you want to share?
Yeah, I think one thing that's interesting is that there, because of, you know, there's this post-Citizens United world where there's tons of money flooding into elections. However, it's really interesting because reporting this story, I've never heard so many liberals praise Justice Antonin Scalia, the late Justice Scalia. And he was a very outspoken advocate of disclosure. So that's one where he's obviously, you know, a conservative-minded justice, but really believed deeply in the power and the importance of disclosure. So that was one really interesting thing. And I think the other interesting thing is that a lot of states are kind of taking it upon themselves to do something because there is really kind of a federal stalemate in Congress. And it's interesting to see California moving in the effort, are you moving towards trying to disclose more information, trying to kind of chip away at dark money groups and getting at where money is coming from? Then you have states like Wisconsin that are actually saying campaign donors just to candidates don't have to disclose their employer because they could be subject to harassment or boycotts. So it's interesting to see the different states kind of shifting in different directions. And you know, I don't expect that to change anytime soon unless maybe we get some new federal decisions. And, well, I guess we'll have to see who's appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court in Justice Scalia's absence.
Read Mary's story in Sunday's Journal Sentinel and find it online, as well as more information about Sunshine Week at jsonline.com. There's hot yoga, yoga Pilates, and now paddleboard yoga? The popular exercise is no longer just for steaming studios. Kathy Flanagan scoped the area for unusual places you can do yoga, including on a paddleboard in the middle of a lake. She talked with Chelsea Lewis about her story, which appeared in Friday's Weekend Tap section.
So, Kathy, in the most recent Weekend Tap section, you have a fun story on yoga in unusual places in Milwaukee. How did that come about?
I was at Raised Grain Brewery one day, and there were all these people in the back doing yoga, and I thought, well, that's different. So we started looking around. I started looking around for where unusual places where people do yoga.
That's awesome. And are you a yogi? Do you do yoga?
I am not a yogi. That makes me sound smart. No, I've tried. I did yoga in the park, Hart Park in Wauwatosa last summer. There's a morning class, but that's about the extent of my yoga abilities.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. My yoga abilities are very limited. But yoga in a brewery, that sounds kind of crazy. How did that come about?
There are two instructors, Christina. Her father is one of the brewers and one of the owners of the brewery. So for their open house, somebody said, oh, let's do yoga. And it stuck. People liked it. Brenner Brewing used to offer yoga, but they don't anymore. There wasn't enough interest. But for some reason, out in Waukesha, they get crowds of 20 people to come out and do yoga in the brewery in open windows.
Do you get a beer while you're doing yoga?
You can get your free beer. It's $10 and you get a pint. So the pints are all like $6. You actually save some money. But you can get it before yoga or you can get it after.
So before, meaning you could possibly have a beer next to you as you're on your yoga mat.
You absolutely can.
It's my kind of yoga. Let's talk about some of the other places you came across. I think one a lot of people who maybe don't even do yoga know about would be the Art Museum. That's a pretty popular one.
Yes, and it's a deal, too. They have yoga one Saturday a month, and it's you make a donation, but you're there before the museum actually opens, and they allow you to stay and look at the art. So if you're thinking about going to the museum and you need to center yourself beforehand, it's kind of a good – it's really a good deal. And they bring in some superstar yoga instructors. So it's not like somebody's just learning. All these people know how to do yoga and know how to get a crowd moving. So, which is good because it gets up to 200 people.
They do it in the Calatrava part, right? So you can potentially like see the sunrise.
You can. You can watch the sunrise. You get to look at the lake. Somebody described it to me as you look up at the beautiful ceiling, and then you look out at the lake. And he said, bonus, the floor is heated. So even in winter, it's really a great place to be or great place to try yoga.
That's awesome. Another one you have on here is paddleboard yoga. Can you explain that a little bit?
I did not get to try this, but the pictures look really hard. You get on a paddleboard and then you do some yoga moves. One of the men I talked to who does yoga at Ray's Grain Brewery also does the paddleboard yoga. And he likes it because you're out on the water. Obviously, it's in summer. So you're out on the water, you're doing your yoga moves, but you also are on a paddleboard. So there's a little extra effort in that. And then afterwards, they all get together for wine.
Oh, my gosh. So there seems to be a pattern here.
There is a
yoga
pattern.
Yoga and alcohol. but, yeah, that sounds kind of crazy. I've done stand-up paddleboarding, and that's challenging enough, just standing there paddling. But then adding yoga in would seem like an extra element of challenge.
It would also seem like the best yoga you've ever done in some ways.
True.
And they invite everybody, so you can be a starter and try it. And good for you.
And do they provide paddle boards?
Yeah, it comes with it. You use their paddle boards and go out. You don't have to have one to do this one.
Great. Any other ones that are particularly interesting?
Well, in the summer, the same people, which is Hometown Yogis, their nonprofit goes out in the parks. So they'll be at Clody Park, Atwater Park, I think, I'm pretty sure, Hart Park. And they go out and teach yoga to the masses there. So you can do yoga on the grass, and I've done it that way and watched an ant crawl over my mat. But it's really nice, as this one man said that I talked to, you know, you're out there and you feel the wind and it's like the breath of God. It's just you're in nature, and part of me thinks that's probably how yoga was intended.
Read more about unique spots to do yoga at tapmilwaukee.com. A new company is testing a novel kind of pill that sounds distasteful to many people. Journal Sentinel business reporter Kathleen Gallagher talks about how this unconventional approach to serious infections of the gut could help patients. She also gives us some tips about how to keep our guts happy.
I'm here with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel business reporter Kathleen Gallagher. Kathleen covers biotech and startups, and she has a very interesting story that's going to appear in our newspaper in an upcoming edition. This is a story about a Waukesha company that has created a solution for a very serious problem affecting people who undergo hospitalization. First, let's talk about the problem, Kathleen. What's the problem that they're addressing with these patients?
Hey, Jim. Well, we've all heard about problems with antibiotic use, overuse. That's been a much covered story. So the problem that this company in Waukesha, it's called FloraSeq, is trying to address is when people have been on antibiotics for a really long time and all the good bacteria in their gut gets cleared out and they're left with all kinds of problems, really horrible problems, because the bad bacteria have taken over their gut.
And is this especially true for people who are in the hospital, right?
Yeah, and it tends to affect older people, too.
And this is such a serious problem. It can lead to debilitating illnesses and death, can it?
Well, I don't want to make you uncomfortable, Jim, but diarrhea 20 times a day, fever,
that's debilitating.
Stomach pain.
That's
yeah.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
So what has this company come up with? What's their solution to address this?
Well, let me tell you first what happens if you have this problem is first line of treatment is more antibiotics. But in a certain number of the people, 15 to 20%, the antibiotics don't work. So second line of treatment is, ready, Jim, a fecal transplant.
Say that again, please.
A fecal transplant where another person's stool is transplanted into your gut on the assumption that it has good bacteria and it'll make your gut healthier. And guess what? It works in 90 to 95% of the cases.
But this company is taking the fecal transplant idea another step further. That's kind of unusual, isn't it?
Well, what they're trying to do is they've come up with a better delivery method. You can imagine how you might transplant do a fecal transplant. They've come up with, to be blunt, a poop pill.
A poop pill. So I would, if I wanted to maintain a healthy gut or if I wanted to address this kind of problem, I would take a pill that had somebody else's poop in it.
Yeah, you wouldn't take it lightly, believe me. But if you had this problem, it'll probably take them about 4 years to develop the pill and get it on the market. But you would pop, right now it'd be 8 of these pills. They've got donors who donate the stool and then they distill it into the bacteria. They try and get it as, down to the bacteria as they can, put it in the pills, and you'd pop the pills, and in 24 hours, theoretically, you'd feel better.
And where are they in the testing and the getting the approval for this kind of a device or this kind of a product?
They just got money from Bright Star Foundation to kind of do what they call their proof of concept to figure out whether this is really going to work and how they can go forward in development.
So I assume they have to get approval from the FDA and other agencies before they can put this on the market.
It's a pretty fast-track approval because fecal transplants have been approved, so it's not like they are having to come up with a new way to deliver the poop.
Okay. And tell me, if I wanted to avoid getting to this stage, there's stuff that we can do as normal, healthy adults to take care of what lives within our guts. That's a whole new field of study, isn't it?
Yeah, it's called the human microbiome, and it's the white-hot research topic right now. The people I talked to at FloraSeq gave us a few tips about how to maintain a healthy gut. We've got those in the story. I'll just give you a couple of them. You can look at the story for the rest, but sauerkraut, fermented food, really good. What I've come to think about it as, instead of, if you're thinking about your gut, instead of thinking about calories, instead of thinking about the nutrition labels, I'm thinking about which bacteria am I feeding, the good bacteria or the bad?
And so if I have a bratwurst with sauerkraut, maybe good.
Yeah.
What else do I want to eat?
Big piece of cake with a lot of sugar in it. The bad bacteria love you.
If you're curious about that story, you can find it in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's also available online at jsonline.com/business. Those paying attention to the Milwaukee mayoral race may have noticed a negative turn lately. Incumbent Tom Barrett has started running attack ads against his opponent, Bob Donovan. Barrett stood by the ads during a meeting with our editorial board. Here's editor Greg Borowski talking to reporter Mary Spacuzza and columnist Daniel Bice about the ads.
All right, we're back live, and if the conversation was about Donald Trump, that must mean we're talking about the Milwaukee mayor's race. So let's go to Mary just a moment. We've got Dan Bice, who joined us, our Watchdog columnist, Mary Spacuzza, who's been following the mayor's race. Tell us about these ads that have been going back and forth where Tom Barrett is saying, Bob Donovan, he's a Republican, he's sort of unstable or irrational like Trump and so forth. Where's that all coming from?
So it started out with Mayor Barrett being attacked by some third-party groups, blaming him for crime, for carjackings, pinning, saying that he thinks the city's problems can be solved with a streetcar. So he today said that the reason he decided to go negative is that if you punch him in the nose, he'll punch you right back. So he decided, his campaign issued some ads targeting Donovan, saying that he is Scott Walker, or has Scott Walker's ideas and Donald Trump's temperament. He basically today, during an edit board meeting, said that he doesn't think Bob Donovan has the temperament to be mayor, and had some examples of why he thinks so. So it is surprising, because everyone thinks of Tom Barrett, nice guy, and his attack ads are not as nice.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things to me is, I mean, they're running, at least I heard them on WISN radio, which isn't probably his voters that he's going for. So he's kind of hitting Donovan.
He's going
for his strength, presumably, and hitting him on it, that he's too conservative and unstable.
It's also a little bit interesting, because you would think that this race would be on a referendum on Barrett, who's been in office for 12 years, not Donovan, who's not been mayor. But I think it's because the first attack radio ad occurred on against Barrett that he felt the need to respond on radio as well. So,
yeah. Is it that simple, though, or are there any suggestions, internal numbers, thinking that this race is closer than people might imagine? I mean, usually, you know, the incumbent, you want to start positive for a while before you go.
And you know, he finished first with 13 percentage points, but obviously didn't get over 50%. More than half the people went to the polls voted against him, not for him. It's a little odd to me that they've made this a radio war instead of a TV battle. I mean, there are no TV ads in this. And contrast that with the county execs race, which we'll talk about in just a minute. But I'm guessing, from all that I hear, the Barrett team is still pretty comfortable with where they are. I think the idea is that, you know, that it levels everything out and that it doesn't have a major impact on the race. It's also interesting, you know, both sides are using people with various different voices in these things to make their points as to one way or the other. So, yeah, but it's right now it's a radio war between the two sides. Yeah.
And I think Barrett's strategy is looking at, you know, his numbers might not be where he wants them to be, but Scott Walker's are certainly worse, especially in the city of Milwaukee County. And so tie your opponent to Scott Walker and think of all the people in Milwaukee County who love Scott Walker. There are not that many, or city of Milwaukee, and so kind of boost his numbers by just contrasting him to.
Right. Well, I mean, election like this is dancing. It's usually a referendum on the incumbent.
Mm-hmm.
But what? So you just heard from Mayor Barrett this morning at the editorial board. What is his, in a nutshell, case as to why he needs or deserves another term from the voters?
He talked about the city's progress in Menominee Valley and development with businesses downtown. He talked about fighting the foreclosure crisis and making a progress in that, and areas like teen pregnancy. He's more recently been touting successes with the residents' preference program of getting especially African-Americans in the city jobs. So I think that he is saying, you know, I know that we have work to do, but that I'm heading in the right direction.
It's not assimilating message that he sends.
It's
a lot of nuts and bolts sort of things, and it's not like we've got this grand plan, but that's not who he is. He's more of a technocrat, and as I discussed with him in the interview for JS on Politics, he's very defensively minded. He's trying to avoid making mistakes, and so he spends a lot of time with that posture, and he obviously has some problems with the crime issue. There is a reason that 54% of the people went to the polls and didn't vote for him. And I think the perceptions about crime are out there, and that's what Donovan's trying to hit him on.
For more of our political coverage, visit jsonline.com/politics. You can also find more of our coverage through our JS on Politics podcast. That's available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. UW basketball has its sights set on the big dance starting later this week. Our own Matt Montgomery chatted with Badgers beat writer Jeff Patrikas about the NCAA tournament.
Joining me today is Badgers beat writer Jeff Patrikas. Jeff, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Jeff, the Badgers have played a tough schedule and have looked strong in Big Ten play. Do you think that will properly prepare them for the NCAA tournament?
You know, I think it will. They won 11 of their last 13 games, and what was impressive about that was five of their last seven were on the road. And in that stretch, they were able to win at Maryland, win at Iowa, and handing both teams their first losses, home losses of the regular season. Now, they didn't fare as well at Michigan State or at Purdue, but I think those teams are just playing better than they are right now. But, they're not going to be afraid about facing any team on a neutral court come the NCAA tournament.
Once again, I'm joined by Badgers beat writer Jeff Patricus. Jeff, what kind of expectations should Badgers fans have for the tournament?
You know what? I don't really know that you can predict how this team's going to fare. I think the one team that you know that they would struggle against would be a team like Purdue, which has the ability to shoot from the outside and also has some very good big players inside. Wisconsin just couldn't match up with those guys. If it's any other kind of team, even if it's just strong guards or a decent inside game, I think Wisconsin's balanced enough to get through the first weekend and get to the Sweet 16, to be honest with you.
The Badgers have had a tumultuous season with a slow start. Bo Ryan stepped down, Greg Gard stepped in, and appears to be pushing all the right buttons with him officially landing the head coaching position. What have been your thoughts on his progression this season?
You know, you never know how someone's going to fare when they make that step up until they actually get that opportunity. But I wrote in last July, that I thought if given the chance, he would prove to be the right choice for the program. So nothing he has done has really surprised me. I think the most important thing he did was when he took over the job, basically the next day, they started working on installing a new offense that the kids weren't familiar with, the swing, and he expanded the bench and completely revamped the way the bench was being used, not only who was being used, but how they were being used. So those two moves told me that even though he absorbed a lot of the foundational lessons from Bo Ryan, he wasn't afraid to do things the way he thought they needed to be done, and it's been successful.
Which players do you think he's had the biggest influence on?
Oh, well, it varies. Bronson Koenig and Nigel Hayes have had to develop from complementary pieces to basically alpha dogs this year. He's helped there. Vito Brown has blossomed from the middle of the season to be a very good complementary piece. The bench guys like Jordan Hill, Khalil Iverson, you didn't know what you're going to get out of them, especially Hill, because he hadn't really done much before. So Greg's use of the bench has allowed those guys to flourish. Sometimes it's been Hill, sometimes Iverson, sometimes Charlie Thomas contributes a little bit, sometimes Alex Ilikainen. So it's been up and down the lineup.
You can read Jeff's writing at jsonline.com/badgers in the sports section of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and you can follow him on Twitter at jpo1961. Jeff, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
The NCAA's Tournament First Four begins this Tuesday, with the first round starting on Thursday. Follow all of our NCAA tournament coverage at jsonline.com/sports and in the print edition of the Journal Sentinel. That's it for today's show. Thanks so much for listening. If you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Hopefully we'll catch you and some 60-degree weather next week as well.